Lord, don't I despise me some Lindsey Graham? And don't I just thank whatever deserves thanks that there is one decent human being in the United States Senate in the form of Bernie Sanders? That's exactly what Lindsey Graham is saying. Screw you, screw your kids, screw John Brodniak and his excruciating headaches, and his wife of not quite a year, who has sacrificed everything following the vows of her traditional family values marriage, clinging to her husband in sickness and in health, mostly sickness. Screw them all, says Lindsey Graham. Let them die. We'll be evaluated by some pretty tough characters in the world by how we handle Afghanistan. We're going to have the troops in Afghanistan to win the conflict. Win what, you miserable right-wing piece of shit? Win what? Win another posthumous Purple Heart for some little boy to have a triangle folded flag put on his lap at a funeral? Win what, Lindsey Graham? Win what? And we'll do it not by asking the American people to pay for it, because the American people would rise up en masse on this one. It would be just a smidgen short of a draft. The response to taxation to pay for this miserable, stinking war that the people of America don't want anymore. And Lindsey Graham knows that. He knows, with the teabaggers out there already on his ass, that if he was to support a tax to pay for the, you know, fiscal conservative Republican that he is, that if he was to support a tax to pay for the war that his fangs bleed daily for, that he would be an ex-senator from the state of South Carolina so fast that his boyfriend's head would spin. And so instead, Lindsey Graham will take it out of John Brodniak's ass. Lightning bolt, please. Damn, still not there. So that's Moran Monday. I hope you'll be around tomorrow night. I certainly enjoyed being with you this evening. Your thoughts, your conversation, your emails. Remember, one of the best ways to support the Horn is to tell your friends and neighbors and get more people involved in the conversation. That's a fact. It's also a fact that it's the end of November, and we are just another foot or two into that financial hole we seem never able to crawl out of. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So is the snail mail address. Whichever way you choose to help is much appreciated. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch. Thanks to Lottie and Sue. Recovering. Just be good to yourself, Sue. Just relax. Don't do too much. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to all of you for all you do. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working people I know, the bravest people I know, CRMW.net and CoalRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, every Thanksgiving Day when I'm working in the kitchen and preparing the turkey, and I think about how good that turkey's going to be, I think, you know, we ought to have turkey more often. I don't know why we don't have turkey more than, you know, once or twice a year. But then after a couple of days of eating turkey leftovers, the first of which are always a joy, but the last of which are done out of a sense of, oh, I don't know, obligation, you realize why you don't have turkey more than once a year. Yeah. Even the little horde of locusts, otherwise known as our kids, kind of got turkey turned off. But it's Monday, and we are past the Thanksgiving holiday. With any luck, we'll have several good shows this week, five hopefully. And a week from now, there will be. I doubt there will be a show on Monday evening. Because the big action rally protest at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, takes place a week from today. Cross your fingers for some good weather, would you? Please? Appreciate it. But no, we're past the Thanksgiving holiday, and it was nice to have a couple of days off, but, I'm still not sure what day it is. I spent all day Thursday thinking it was Saturday, all day Friday thinking it was Sunday. And then Saturday and Sunday were just a total loss to me. Right, you get it. So, you know, there I am. I think we're going to have a lovely Monday evening of being sort of catty and gossipy and talking about just sort of visualizing the image of Mrs. Tiger Woods chasing Mr. Tiger Woods down the street in their McMansion community. Sorry, I had a strange noise going on and I couldn't find it. I found it. It was the air mattress pumper-upper that had accidentally gotten turned on inside a drawer. And, it's like having the klaxon going off in the submarine and not being able to find the leak. It's very disturbing. Anyway, I thought we'd have a little fun with, sort of visualizations of Mrs. Tiger Woods in her pink robe and fuzzy slippers chasing Cletus Tiger Woods down the road to the trailer park, whomping on his car with the golf club. And I thought, that'd be just a hell of a fine old time. Right? Wrong. Because before I could ever, it would have been gossipy and it would have been just catty and awful, and but it would have been a little bit of a relief from the annual day-to-day march through misery, hell, and death that this program seems so often to be, for which I profoundly apologize. But it ain't like I'm the right wingers doing that stuff. But no. Oh, damn, Mr. and Mrs. Tiger would have made such wonderful members of Moran Monday, wouldn't they? Can't you just say, Tiger, you come back here now, you come back here, you philandering Tiger, you! Because, she's Swedish. Don't you know? Oh, it would have been fun. It would have been fun. But no. Instead of that, we've got Moran Monday. But even instead of Moran Monday, what do we got? I'll tell you what we got. We got the FFM at work. No, I am not talking about the future farmers of Maryland or future farmers of Maine or Michigan or Mississippi. Did I miss any M states? Missouri! Not talking about them either. I'm talking about fundamentalists facilitating murder. Or perhaps, subject to your vote and approval, fundamentalists fomenting massacre. Because we've got two examples of it on the radar this evening. Lottie, yeah, Bob, when it finally gets down to the turkey milkshakes, I'm about done for the year with turkey. We weren't far from the turkey milkshakes, and I gotta tell you, Lottie's pumpkin pie recipe, sweet potato pie recipe, is just killer with white sweet potatoes. It has a slightly different color by the time you're done with it because of all the spices and so forth. But I'm convinced that white sweet potatoes are slightly less pulpy and woody than yellow ones. But that's just, oh my God, it was good. And you can absolutely lose your mind making that topping. Oh! I made four. Which shouldn't have taken more than two to do dessert after Thanksgiving dinner. No. They were gone. I mean, not a speck. Oh, they're good. But anyway, going back to the FFM. It could also be fundamentalists facilitating misery, too, because we got that story as well. It's not exactly prayer meeting Wednesday, but there are just some stories you can't put off. You can't make wait for the show schedule to roll around into proper synchronization. This ain't the Mayan calendar, you know? So, obviously, you can't not. You know what happened? You know what happened out in Washington State, you know what happened. Happened yesterday, the 29th of November. And it is believed that Maurice Clemens shot dead four Lakewood, Washington police officers. Just went in and gunned them down. Killed them. Destroyed the families. It's hard to talk about. I can't begin to comprehend the agony of those families, or any family so subjected. Felon with a firearm shattered those families. And here's where the FFM part comes in, if you don't already know. Radical fundamentalist cleric and Fox News the TV gas bag and former Arkansas governor who and father of a man who beats captive dogs to death as they hang from a tree, Mike Huckabee, was governor of Arkansas when Maurice Clemens sought clemency. And there was a host of law enforcement officials who said, "Good God, Mr. Governor, Don't give clemency to this guy. He's a bad seed. He needs to remain in prison." One of those people was Larry Jegley. Larry Jegley is the prosecuting attorney for Pulaski County in Arkansas. They called him and told him what had happened up in Lakewood, Washington. And he said, "This is the day I've been dreading for a long, long time." In the year 2000, almost 10 years ago, in the year 2000 in Arkansas, Maurice Clemens was a prisoner with 5 felony convictions. He was looking at something like 95 years. One of the, it was stuff like child rape, okay? And he was, he was in Arkansas, he was facing, like I said, 95 years. At the age of 18 in Arkansas, Maurice Clemens was sentenced to 60 years in prison for burglary and theft of property. During one of his trials in Arkansas, the man was shackled in leg irons and seated next to a uniformed police officer, and the presiding judge ordered the extra security because he felt Clemens had threatened him. On another occasion, he had a hinge stuffed in his sock. I think the prison term for that is a shank. Yeah. Folks thought he was going to use it as a weapon. Another time, he took a lock from a holding cell and threw it at the bailiff. He missed the bailiff and whomped his mama with it instead. He did things like reaching for the guard's pistol during transports. So when he got the sentence of the 60 years, at that time he was already doing 48 years on 5 felony convictions, and he still had 95 years of charges facing him for robbery, theft of property, possessing a handgun on school property. And these were all committed when he was 17. And this is where it gets a little dodgy. And this is why I'm a liberal, because I'll admit it gets dodgy. Maurice Clemens did 11 years in prison. Real prison. Not club fed. The Arkansas maximum security, prison. He did 11 years when radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee turned him loose, granting him clemency. Not a pardon, but clemency. Like George Bush did for Scooter Libby. Clemency. And at that point, he was put on parole. And which he promptly violated. How did he violate the parole? You can violate your parole without even trying in some instances. Let's say you're living in a house and, mama likes a little nip of, elderberry wine before bed to help her heart. You can violate your parole just by sitting there and not even touching the stuff. Because it's a rule. Not be around where alcohol is served or alcohol is possessed, yada, yada, yada. Boom! You just violated. But that's not how Maurice Clemens violated his parole. In 2001. Oh, hell no! No, in March of 2001, he committed aggravated robbery. You know, that's where you use a weapon. And so he went back to prison. But apparently he wasn't served the arrest warrants until he left the prison 3 years later, and his attorney, his lawyer, argued that the charges should be dismissed because too much time had passed, and prosecutors dropped the charges because there just wasn't a hell of a lot prosecutors could do. There are rules involved in this process, you know. And it all starts with an act of clemency by radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, who was then governor of Arkansas, who, seeing that Maurice Clemens had spent 11 years in the big house, commuted his sentence and had him put on parole. In 2004, he moved to Washington. In Washington State, he'd been in jail in Pierce County on a pending charge of second-degree rape of a child, as I said. 7 days ago, a week ago, he made bail, even though he had 7 more felony charges facing him. He put up $15,000 with jail sucks bail bonds. And the bonding company then put up $150,000 securing his release. And then he did what he did. And again, I'm liberal. And I acknowledge that this is difficult stuff. Marty writes in and says, oh, great, a pig-licking Willie Horton. I wonder if they've started trying to paint him as a Muslim yet. Well, no, Marty, they're not trying to paint him as nothing, because I've periodically turned on Fox News, and it's, beep, crickets. Now, during the manhunt, it was wall-to-wall coverage. Police in Lakewood, Washington are searching for a Negro on a rampage. You know? But once the Huckabee stuff started, beep! But that's okay, because radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, presidential hopeful, father of dog beater, former governor, well, because he lives by the tenets of the Prince of Peace, well, you know, if you're really, really a follower of Yeshua, you have to confess your sins and make amends and do all of that, right? And remember, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, well, he tells us all the time what a Christian he is, tells the whole world just how much he loves that Jesus. That's why Mike Huckabee said that it is the tragedy in Lakewood is the result of a series of failures in the criminal justice system in both Arkansas and Washington State. Yes, sirree! You know what? I love it when the pig lickins live by their principles. You know, the pig lickin party, it's all the time talking about how we got to take personal responsibility for our actions and can't be suing no insurance companies nor doctors nor... Oh, hell no, we got to take personal responsibility. That woman what burned her hoo-hoo with the scalding hot McDonald's coffee, she got rich because she wouldn't take no personal responsibility for dropping the coffee on her... You know it. Yeah. And that's why radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee immediately flew to Lakewood, Washington, and got on his knees the minute the plane touched the ground and walked on his knees to the homes of the families that he personally shattered and begged them for their forgiveness not. Oh, no. Because, you see, personal responsibility and seeking forgiveness and trying to make amends, that's for us, not for them. For them, it is sufficient to say that it will be the result of a series of failures in the criminal justice system in both Arkansas and Washington State. Jesus, God, he sounds like somebody from a Kurt Vonnegut novel stepping off the spaceship and saying, I was a victim of a series of accidents, as are we all. Oh, Kurt, we miss you. Thank God you left such a body of work to remind us of the nature of human foolishness and human evil as it strides the planet. And then, further not taking personal responsibility for his act, radical fundamentalist and former cleric and former Governor Mike Huckabee also said, well, you know, his release from prison was reviewed and approved by the Arkansas Parole Board. I was just signing my name. That's all I was doing, signing my name. Of course, I'm an excellent name signer. Sign slow on the notebook. Definitely granting clemency, definitely. Well, here's the first movie reference. Here's the second one, Raising Arizona. Maurice, if we allow you out of prison, you promise you're going to change your life and get away from your life crime? Yes, I do. All right, you're a free man. Raising Arizona. Ain't nothing funny about this. And it's the kind... Listen. I don't go in for this dualistic vision of, you know, if there's a God, there has to be a devil. If the God's got angels, the devil has to have... You know, cosmology or whatever ain't algebra, and the equation doesn't always have to balance. But if I was one to believe in a devil out there, you can bet your ass I'd be rock solid, lead pipe cinch certain that people like radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee are as sure as God made little green apples in Satan's service. Because you've got to remember, broad is the way that leads to hell. And he and millions of others took that on-ramp, cruising right along. None of this matters, of course, to the grieving families who are still in a state of abject shock in Lakewood, Washington. None of it matters at all. It only matters that an intensely violent, profoundly flawed human being entered a little coffee shop. Where some cops were sitting. And blew them away. Blew away hopes and blew away dreams. Blew away ambitions. Blew away plans. Blew away futures.
blew away families, blew it all away. And yes, it is one more little down payment on the butcher's bill in the dance of death that we have with the devil for our ongoing fascination with firearms. Nobody had him. He might have come in with a ball bat or a knife or something, or maybe a sharpened hinge out of his sock. But he wouldn't have taken what he took. No, sir. Nope, he wouldn't have. The absolute destruction of families. By another member of the Family Values crowd. We want to find something for us to laugh about tonight, because otherwise this is going to get tough. Yeah, I don't know if you saw Nicholas Kristof's column from the 28th in the New York Times, called "Are We Going to Let John Die?" It's kind of odd when you see actual news reporting on the opinion page. But the state of news gathering has gotten to the point where, lo and behold, that's what you do see. And just to share a couple of words with you. Nicholas Kristof writes, "If Joe Lieberman or other senators came across John Brodniak writhing in pain on the sidewalk, they presumably would jump to help him and rush him to a hospital. I, for one, personally believe that Nicholas Kristof has begun his column with a false premise. Because, among other things, that sick, twisted, self-interested, sorry, pathetic excuse for a member of the human race, Joe Lieberman, would cross to the other side if he saw such a man as John Brodniak. You know full well that I don't go in for much of the manufactured claptrap of organized religion, but I think that some of the stories can be instructive. And the first thing, you know, and remember, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, okay? I'm by no means well. And so the references from that very, very odd book seem with me always. And when Nicholas Kristof's first paragraph got through my mind, the first thing that came to my mind was likely the first thing that's coming to a lot of yours, the story of the Good Samaritan. You remember the story of the Good Samaritan, do you not? Yeah, and it comes from the Bible. Luke chapter 10, verse 25 through 37. Beginning most particularly with verse 30. We'll be reading from the Heretic New International Version at this time. Beginning back on verse 25, so no one could say that I took the parable out of context. You know, the pig lickings are all the time saying, "Yeah, you took it out of context." Luke 10, chapter 25 through 37. "On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. 'Rabbi,' he said, 'what must I do to inherit eternal life?' 'What is written in the law?' he replied. 'How do you read it?' He answered, 'Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself.' 'You have answered correctly,' Jesus replied. 'Do this, and you will live.'
But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?"
Pettifogging and lawyers. Reminds me of that story of W.C. Fields in his old age, burned out by booze, but still a wit and still a funny man, sitting on his front porch, blanket over his lap, with lo and behold, a copy of the Bible in his lap. And one of his old drinking buddies and hell-raising pals come by and say, "Fields, what in God's name are you doing with the Bible?" Fields patiently thumbing through the leaves, the pages, looks up and says, "Looking for a loophole." Luke chapter 10, verse 25. Verse 29, but he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" And in reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest," and by this he wasn't talking about some Roman Catholic cleric, he was talking about a Jewish temple priest. There was still a temple at that time. "A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side." But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on olive oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey and took him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will reimburse you for any expense you may have." Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Anybody here, and remember, this is just like Romper Room, I have the special ability to see hands as they come up in out in the series of tubes. It's not a big truck. Anybody here, show of hands, please. Think that Joe Lieberman would be that good neighbor? Heck no. Joe Lieberman, not being a senator and not a priest of the temple, I suppose you would have to say is probably the Levite. He's the second man. The second man. To see the victim and walk past. And I will submit to you, and I haven't even told you who John Brodniak is yet, but I will submit to you that the second man is more evil than the first. The first man was a priest. By social definition, better than everyone else. And was thus imbued with his sense of his betterment. It was bad for him to walk by. But it was the second man. It's the second man who walks by, who compounds the evil. Joe Lieberman is that second man. And the question, and remember what a Samaritan was.
A Samaritan was not to be touched. A Samaritan, from the moment he was born, was deemed unclean. Literally human filth. Not fit for what passed for proper society in those benighted times by those benighted people. But he was the one who washed the wounds with olive oil and wine. Both costly. Both not being something you want to just throw on the ground. But he did it at his own expense. And then went the extra mile by paying the innkeeper to once he had seen the victim, the robbed man, past his moment of crisis, and he never left him during the crisis. But once he had seen him through the worst of it, put two pieces of silver in the innkeeper's hands, which we are to understand, was probably more than the cost of the room and board to begin with, by a long shot. I mean, remember, they only paid Judas 30 pieces, right? But put those two pieces of silver into his hand and said, "Take care of him. And if you run through this, I'll pay you more." He had more concern for his fellow human being, even though, for all we know, since the man was going from Jerusalem to Jericho, that man might not even have stopped and aided the Samaritan had the Samaritan been the one who was wounded. My God, the man might have had to gone back to the temple and taken 92 baths. Just to get the human stench of a dirty, 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 dirty Samaritan off of him. Because, you know, they were so much better than Samaritans. But the Samaritan didn't ask any of those questions. Now, had we had some teabaggers around back then, they'd have been screaming at Jesus from the back of the crowd, going, "You damn socialist! Fascist! Never mind, we don't know the difference between the two, but you've got to be them both. They's both bad." But there is no doubt in my mind that Joe Lieberman, in this set piece, is the second man passing by. Now, who's John Brodniak? Well, as Nicholas Kristof notes, even assuming for a moment that Joe Lieberman picked up John Brodniak and took him to the ER, and I'm quoting, "Unfortunately, an emergency room won't help. Indeed, the closest ER has told him not to come back," he says. "So, for those members of Congress who are wavering on health reform, listen to John's story." Now, I'm probably going to mispronounce a county name in Oregon. Please withhold the corrective emails. "John is a sawmill worker from Yamhill County, Oregon," Nicholas Kristof says, "where I grew up. He was a foreman at a mill, felt strong and healthy, and he had very basic health insurance through his job. On April the 18th, he was married at age 23, and life was looking up. On May the 3rd, 10 days after the wedding, he was walking in his backyard carrying a neighbor's dog, and he just blacked out. So then started, and I'm paraphrasing here, the incessant round of CTs and MRIs and absolute befuddlement and bafflement. All kinds of other tests, and finally they realized that John Brodniak had something called, and Jesus, you just look at it on the page and you know you don't want it, a cavernous hemangioma in the left parietal lobe of his brain. And a cavernous hemangioma, writes Nicholas Kristof, is an abnormal growth of blood vessels, which, in the case of John Brodniak, is, as we speak, chronically leaking blood into his brain. When he blacked out, that was when it got bad enough to start causing problems. So Nicholas Kristof writes, John began to have trouble walking and would sometime collapse. He got spasms. He got restless leg syndrome. Gosh, I can't recount the number of times that I have heard that great American hero and street drug junkie, Flush Flemball, make jokes about restless leg syndrome. John Brodniak developed it. He got to where he had to use a cane. Remember, he's 23 years old. And the basic functioning of his mind began to deteriorate. His bride, Esther Brodniak, said, he forgets stuff a lot, he bumps into things, but he keeps things light. He jokes about it. Nicholas Kristof says perhaps the worst is the pain, blinding, incapacitating headaches that have left him able to sleep only in short intervals. He vomits daily when the pain surges. Quoting John Brodniak, he says, the pain is constant. It is a 7 or 8 on a scale of 10, and then it hits the high peaks and makes me vomit. So with all of this going on, it sort of stands to reason that, well, John Brodniak lost his job. And when John Brodniak lost his job, guess what? Well, he also lost what health insurance coverage he had. Now, when he fell in love with Esther and married her, Esther had two children by a previous marriage, and she had a job at the local factory where they built manufactured homes, you know, trailers. And through that job, she had insurance for herself and the two babies. But her employer-based health insurance wouldn't allow her to add her husband because he had a pre-existing condition. So it is possible that surgery would correct John Brodniak's problem. And it is possible that some medications might address the pain. He can't have either one. John Brodniak has to continue to suffer, because helping John Brodniak would mean sending this whole great nation spiraling down into a pit of socialist socialist gimme state welfare disgusting un-Americanism. Now, the headaches do get particularly awful from time to time, and sometimes he just flat out collapses. So his bride, Esther, gets him lickety-split to the emergency room of one hospital or another hospital, wherever she can get him to. But none of the ERs can help him. You remember how, Phil Gingrey and Dr. Paul Brown of Georgia a few Friday nights back had that little clavering there after hours in the house talking about how anybody in America who needs to see a doctor can see one in the emergency room. Remember that? I remember that. Well, it goes without saying that it's a damn lie because it was said by a repiglican. But this really, really puts the lie to it. I don't know how people like Representative Paul Brown and Phil Gingrey and Virginia Fox and Michelle Bachmann and that whole filthy crew managed to go through life without hearing stories like John Brodniak's. But they absolutely must go through life thusly. Because you could not hear a story like this, and then being a member of the House of Representatives or the Senate, go, yea, verily, immediately unto that chamber and begin banging on things until something was done to fix these crises, these avoidable crises, these sickening tragedies that happen not because God wants them to or because they're unavoidable, but simply because these no good bastards have refused to act. No, the ERs can't do much for John Brodniak. And one ER told him not to come back unless he gets insurance. Esther had some family leave saved up from her job. She burned that pretty quick, taking care of John. And she said, then I went back to work, and he fell several times. Told my boss that I had to quit. Taking care of John was more important than building somebody else's house. So then, the journey proceeds from bad to worse. Out of the frying pan, into the fire. Because at that point, nothing. No income. Done. And no insurance at all for anybody. Not even the babies. The community program has paid the rent so that they're not homeless. Neighbors have kicked in to help. But you know, there's only so much that neighbors and community programs can do because neighbors and community programs are already strapped for what they are able to do. And in order to take care of our fellow man in this country, it requires something far greater than the piddling powers of one small community. It takes a village to raise a child, but by God, sometimes it takes a whole damn nation to save one. And of course, the doctors have not been silent on this. They say that John Brodniak is sort of a ticking time bomb, that pressure from the growth of the, what was it, cavernous hemangioma? Could cause another blood vessel inside his brain to simply rupture, and that will be the end of the John Brodniak story. He said, they tell me I'm a time bomb. Sort of feels as if they're playing for time to see if it bursts to save them from doing anything. God knows that's the strategy of the insurance companies. Nicholas Kristof adds that he is not a physician, but he has examined the medical records and they appear to confirm John Brodniak's story. Then he says this. John says the principal obstacle to treatment appears to be simply his lack of insurance. In August, he qualified for an Oregon Medicaid program, but he hasn't been able to find a doctor who will accept him as a patient for surgery, apparently because the reimbursements are so low. You got to remember that in the Republican world, that's evil socialism too, that Medicaid. And so instead of killing it outright and showing themselves for the demons that they are, they prefer just to starve it to death. And the reimbursement rates are part of that. And of course, since we are talking about brain surgery here, you know, one of the first things, you know, that's probably the least developed of all the surgical areas. Some of you have got to, like me, be thinking, wow, could you even get in there and do something about that? And the answer, according to the doctors, is yes, you can. It's completely operable.
It's not rocket science. It's not it doesn't require any radical new techniques. It just requires a national willingness to take care of the least among us. The doctors also say they can't accept him without conventional insurance. And John Brodniak, with daily excruciating pain, vomiting, losing the ability to walk, losing the very ability to think and comprehend, watching the destruction of his family before his very eyes, thinks only that maybe if he could go back to work, he could get better. Because then he could have insurance again. He says, the mill won't let me go back to work till a doctor gives me a note saying I can go back. I tried with several doctors. I said, just give me a note. I got to do something for my family. But they won't. At the end of the piece, Nicholas Kristof references the American Journal of Public Health study done by a group at Harvard that says, as we have talked about on this program time after time after time, that 45,000 Americans die every year simply because they don't have insurance. I'm glad he mentioned it. And then he closes thusly. If a senator strolled indifferently by as John retched in pain, we would think that person pitiless. But isn't it just as monstrous for politicians to avert their eyes, make excuses, and deny coverage to innumerable Americans just like John? And the answer is, of course, yes. And there are lots of those senators. Senators named Cornyn, and senators named Lieberman, and senators named Lincoln, and senators named Nelson, and senators named Corker, and senators named Coburn, and senators named DeMint, and senators named Sessions, and senators named Shelby. Yes, there are lots of such senators. In fact, far too many that are good for America. And so the difference between the parable in Luke chapter 10 and the modern America we have here, well, the version of Luke chapter 10, if we were having to deal with modern America and Joe Lieberman, would go a little something like this. In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him and passed by on the other side. And then a Republican came along and saw him, and he passed by on the other side. And 55 people! No. How many Republicans are there in the Senate and the House together? Whatever that number. And all those people passed by that man lying bleeding and dying on the road. And they passed by on the other side of the road, and that man died. Here endeth the lesson. Welcome to Merca. Yeah. Indeed.
This is the Horn. You know that. America's listener-supported liberal voice. We are closing, as of this evening, an incredibly brutal month of attempting to stay on the air. We got right at enough of our monthly goal to keep us on the air for the first half of December. We'll do everything in our power to stay. And tomorrow begins another month. You know, if you wish, you can call in and participate. It's been a long time since we talked. That was a long holiday weekend. Thanksgiving always is. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Direct dial is 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Take a little musical interlude. We'll be back.
Preparing for the future. the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
I love the way that you guys take something that I put out there and then build on it. I was just reminded by Texas Betsy of something that she had sent me, last Friday-ish. In the midst of the Thanksgiving holiday. And these things, you know, these things just have a way of sort of coming back around and making it, you know, and having meaning. And in this particular instance, parable that we were reading from, Jesus mentions that the second guy coming by is a Levite, right? Well, Texas Betsy writes and she says, you know by now that I can't read any section of Torah anymore without thinking about the kinds of issues you raise. She says, did you get my thoughts on Leviticus? Leviticus 19:16. See, all these little ugly fundamentalists want to find the hateful stuff, and they ignore, you know, I guess they've got like special seeing stone glasses like Joseph Smith or something. I don't know. And they ignore the stuff that really matters because Betsy points out Leviticus 19:16. Do not stand idly by while your neighbor's blood is being spilled. You know, it doesn't say while your good Jewish neighbor's blood is being spilled or your Orthodox or your Reformed or your it doesn't say do not stand idly by while your neighbor's blood is being spilled unless your neighbor is a Samaritan or a Canaanite or a Moabite or an Ammonite. It says your neighbor. And it kind of goes to show that the one thing we do know about Jesus, if he actually existed, was that he was a pretty hotshot rabbi. Because he was on his toes and he was quick enough to come up with that. Out of Leviticus, which in turn refers back to the Levite, who is the second guy who walks past the wounded man on the road. Whew. That's quick. Oh, and by the way, I was guessing. I wasn't even guessing. I was just saying that Lieberman would be the Levite. And Betsy informs me, people with the last name Levi, Levine, Lieberman, Liebman, almost all have fathers or grandfathers from the Levite tribe. How do you like that? Joe Lieberman is the Levite in the Good Samaritan parable. How do you like that? Tell me another radio show you're going to find where you'll figure that kind of thing out. And, you know, I've talked long enough. Let's go to the phones. Okay, or not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke.
Well, like I say, I've been sitting here while we're talking and, well, turning the sound off, of course, been watching Faux Noise. And amazingly enough, they can't get back to the manhunt story.
Really? Still can't find it?
They still ain't found it. No, no. They're still on Obama's...
But they were, Luke, wall to wall while it was just a scary Negro.
Huckabee was mentioned, and Huckabee mentioned, all of a sudden, sorry, down the rat hole.
Boop.
Sorry, can't talk about that anymore. Okay, I have a few things.
This is Pravda.
I know. Well, let's put it this way. Now, my question is on this whole thing with the gate crashers up at the White House.
Yeah.
My question is, which Secret Service is it that's investigating this? Is this the Secret Service in 98 that decided Bill Clinton, we have to inform on him because he's our president? Or is this the same Secret Service in 2002 that told the local Washington police, you can't arrest those underage girls for drinking because they're the president's daughters and they can ignore the law?
Or was it the Secret Service that said, no, you don't get to see who's coming to visit Dick Cheney?
No, we have to burn those records. If we can't keep them locked up, we'll burn them first.
Exactly.
But of course, if you want to know who Bill Clinton rented the White House bedroom to, we'll show you those.
But I'll tell you which Secret Service this is. This is the Secret Service that got busted right before Obama took office for its membership sending out a raft of hate-filled, vile, vicious, racist emails.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is the Secret Service that gave the code name Renegade to Barack Obama, and Renegade just happens to be an old stupid Styx song that contains the phrase, the jig is up.
Okay, let's move on to something else here. We'll hit a few hot topics. Okay, now explain to me why the mainstream media is just absolutely going ape crap over this whole thing with Tiger Woods, when apparently it was a single car accident on his own street. Nobody was run over. And all this, and I just want to juxtapose this with the same crowd that when we found out some fellow named Limbaugh had been buying illegal drugs.
Oh, same state.
Yeah. Decided, oh, we can't look at that too much. We have to wait for the National Enquirer to out it because we can't talk about it.
I got to tell you, Luke, you make me a little ashamed of myself.
I mean, just...
No, I'm serious. You do. Because I've been looking at it from the standpoint of, well, you know, if the same circumstances had happened with a guy named, I don't know, Roosevelt Jefferson,
mm-hmm.
or a guy named Ramon Gutierrez, or a guy named Joe Smith, those guys would have been dragged out at 4 o'clock in the morning in their boxer shorts and their wife-beater T-shirts with the theme music from Cops blaring in the background. And there wouldn't have been any, may we speak to the person involved in the accident, please? Oh, I'm sorry, he's taking a nap right now. Tomorrow would be better. Tomorrow comes around. May we speak to the person involved in the accident, please? You know, today's not so good. Why don't you call back tomorrow?
Well, like I say...
That wouldn't have happened.
But have you noticed how the last 2 days, all it has been is speculation? If you turn on any news show, you know, sports, or turn on regular news, they've already decided what the story is. I mean, they're already floating their ideas because one of them wants to be the right one. You know, whoever ends up being right will swear he knew it all along.
Right, and there'll be a whole promo campaign with billboards and air and TV cover. And yeah, he was correct. Yeah,
he knew much of the news before anybody else could, and none of these guys have a clue really what it is.
No, but realistically, if you're a guy and you're married, there are only two reasons to leave the house at 2:25 in the morning. Beer run and argument with the wife.
It could be both.
You know, I mean, if you're regular folks like us, and you've got, you know, a baby who's, let's see, do the math real quick, Bob, 9 months old, it could be, honey, I didn't realize it, but we're out of diapers. That's there.
But you know what I mean? The thing of it is, it doesn't involve anybody but him and his, apparently his wife. So guess what? I don't care.
Like I said, you're making me ashamed of myself.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like the only reason is because his name is Tiger Woods. This happens every other night, every other street just about in America. But by golly, they've got to have helicopters now flying over his house, showing the pictures of his street. And I'm like, God, you know, it's like.
This is him, the fire plug.
I'll be honest. If I was him, I'd come walk up to the podium whenever it has a thing, and I'd say, none of your damn business.
That or walk out when the helicopters are flying over and give them the Bud Adams.
Well, no, they're too used to that. You got to figure out something new on that. I don't know what, but you know, maybe we'll go out at night, and maybe he could rent one of those searchlights and just keep shining the light on them. You know, when they pass over, tell the guy on the searchlight, you keep the light on that helicopter. You don't leave, as long as he's within range, you keep that light right in his face. So if they're taking camera shots, I want them to see a big bright white light looking up at him. But okay, let's go on to something else. I know that one's a good one.
Yeah, but no, I'm proud of you, and I'm ashamed of myself.
No, but I mean, you know, it's one of these things. It's like, say, I am still wondering on this whole thing, though, about the Secret Service thing is, I'm just curious where people like the NSA and some of these other, you know, alphabet soups are.
Well, you know what, let me just toss one other thing out there, because I sort of went cruising around and looked for right-wing opinion on the Secret Service affair.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what did I see? I saw, Obama administration dithers no more, Secret Service investigation underway. Saw that. And then I saw, it can't possibly be the Secret Service's fault. After all, somebody in the Obama administration had to have put together that guest list. It's their job to... They weren't on the guest list.
It's their job to demand the gate.
And now there's, I guess, booking gate? Because the woman who did the booking, you know, quit her job with the new administration, and now it's apparently, you know, a federal offense?
Well, the one I'm liking is apparently they were, from what I understand, this couple was going to be on Larry King Live, the perfect oxymoron.
Larry King and animatronic.
Yeah, but like I said, apparently that is not going to happen now, because I saw earlier tonight they're going to have Jesse Ventura is going to be on tonight with Larry King. Ah, oh, yes, which I'm sure that's going to be a scintillating conversation. But okay, and if everybody wants to take a bathroom break, go ahead right now. We're going to talk sports for 5 minutes. My question, have they seen the cloud of white smoke so we can now go ahead and name St. Tebow as Pope?
Oh, man.
I mean, I've said this weekend, and every time...
I thought the guys on ESPN were going to cry.
Well, the thing got me was... Now, freely, I will admit that I come at this with a bias because we went through the whole Peyton Manning thing. But have you noticed how this is sort of the parallel to it? From 12 years ago, Peyton Manning on the Kentucky game 12 years ago threw for almost 500 yards. They couldn't even mention his name on their show. Because they had to tell you, Charles Woodson had two interceptions. And now, I'm sitting here this weekend, and I'm sitting here watching them push Tebow, but you know what, mainly enough, I can't see him mention Colt McCoy's name once.
No, and, well, but you know who my candidate is.
Which one?
I want to have Toby Gerhart's babies.
Oh, okay. I'll admit it, yeah, he's got good numbers, but like I say, he's West Coast. I don't think they're going to make it.
Well, yeah, the West Coast thing is, and you know, that's just a damn shame because there's some fine football played out there.
Well, like,
but I watched what happened Saturday night, and it was the first time I ever got to watch the boy play, and there were a couple of things that happened. One, he's a beer truck.
Yeah.
And he's a beer truck that's fast.
Yeah.
He's a runaway beer truck. And he ran he was absolutely determined that if the other 10 people playing for, other 21 people playing for Stanford wanted to lose to Notre Dame, he didn't.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to have that on his ass.
Oh, I tell you what.
And he took that whole team on his shoulders and carried it down and carried him down and beat Notre Dame almost single-handedly to the extent one football player can. But at the same time that not at the same time, but similarly, train speaker. In his post game, of course, Tim Tebow had the whole world aflutter, wondering what Bible verse he would have under his eyes that Saturday.
Oh, we had the guy from Tony Barnhart, you know, from out of Atlanta. Oh, he was just amazed, you know, because he was sitting there going, "How Tebow's totally changed football," and I'm sitting there going, "What? He said, yeah, because he had those Bible verses under his head. Amazing how many hits that got on the internet. And I'm like, oh.
Seethe. But it turned out it was Hebrews 12:12.
Yeah.
Or 12:1 and 2, but 12:12. It says, you know, strengthen the arms and make strong the weak knees. You know, I wouldn't be putting that out there if I was going in the draft.
Well, I'll tell you something here in a minute on the draft.
But I was just blessed. It was a blessing. It's like listening to Gomer Pyle do a post game. Honest to God, it is. I was just blessed. It is special. And then, but then, okay, just to compare, then the contrast to that is the post-gamer with Toby Gerhart.
Okay.
You know, and it's always with Tim Tebow. I gotta thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, Sergeant Carter. Toby Gerhart was grinning like a fox eating poop out of a wire brush. He looked like he was about 6 years old, just finished playing in his first midget league game. Okay.
Wow.
He was, I mean, having fun. And whoever the on-field interview lady was says, you know, well, how do you feel about tonight? And he says, I just feel great. You know, grin. And I'm sitting here listening because I've been made paranoid, Luke. I have been made absolutely paranoid over the years. I was just sitting there listening. And I'm tuned in to hear, I just want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for helping me get that 62-yard breakoff run that put the... No. Didn't say nothing about his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Didn't point no fingers at heaven. And if you notice, when he runs into the end zone, he acts like he's done it a lot.
Well, the one that got...
So he's my guy.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Go ahead.
Ooh. Fox News is actually mentioning the story now.
Oh, no.
Ooh. It's Shepard Smith, though. He at least acts like he has an ounce of intention.
Well, yeah, well, Shepard Smith's, he's an insurgent fox guy.
I know. But, no, the thing on the thing, we were sitting here, and one of our local guys mentioned this the other day, and I heard it, and I just kind of went, yeah, that's right, isn't it? He mentioned, you know, the fun part of it is that most of the scouts will tell you that Tebow probably will not even go in the first round because pro don't play that kind of game. You know,
no.
Quarterback tries playing like that, he'll last about two games.
Yeah, I want to see him do that jump pass thing in the NFL.
So the guy,
because he'll come down in several different pieces of you know, he'll come down. And, you know, Hebrews 12 will be over there, and Philippians 4 will be over there. Yeah.
Well, our local guy had the fun part of is, you know, the person who we think is leaving as a junior this year is Eric Berry here. You know, because But he's been already told that chances are, if he goes as a junior, he will be in the top 10, probably in the top 5. So the fun part of thinking is that he's going to make a hell of a lot more money than St. Debo will be making in the NFL.
Well, there's that, and I'll tell you, somebody else whose draft stock went up significantly is, what was his name? I can't remember now. It absolutely carried the Volunteers on his back.
Hardesty.
Yeah. Montarius Hardesty.
Yeah, well, I think in the last two games, he's had 35 rushes for over 350 yards, so he's averaging 10 yards a clip. So, like you say, he's up to about 1,300 yards for this year. And that's still only leaving like third, I think, in the SEC. But, they said that it's helped him. There's some people around here that say the chances are Crompton will be picked in the draft. Maybe low in it. Or may have to go to camp, but said there's a good chance he'll get picked.
Is there still an NFL Europe?
Well, yeah, I think there still was. Is it AFL or something they have over there? I can't remember what the exact thing is. But like you said, it's just going to be interesting to watch because the draft is so much different. You know what I mean? But like I say, we're just sitting now. We're just waiting for next week, and we're just sitting there going, please let St. Tebow try to run on Alabama. Please, because they aren't pro, but they're sort of semi-pro. So when he tries to run, I'm just waiting for one of them to deck him.
God knows their players are paid like pros. Never mind, I was just tacky.
Well, I say, just remember, if you ever want a fun one this year, if you can find it somewhere, go back and look at the Tennessee-Florida game and watch what happened when he met Eric Berry head on. Eric Berry didn't back up none.
No. No, he didn't. And, but I'll tell you, it sounds like you're taking Alabama. I am not.
I'm just wondering if everybody else will pick, because like I say, I think that Mr. Ingram, if he does play, will play sparingly. But I'm just wondering if the rest of the team will kind of pick it up because of that.
That's a possibility, but I don't. What's his name?
McElroy?
Yeah, McElroy.
McElroy.
He's going to have Joe Namath day.
Oh, yeah. I don't know he's going to have a great day. Oh, the one that's so funny right now is if you listen to the SEC people, is they're talking about the ACC championship game next year and next week, and it's going to be fun. You're going to have Clemson facing Georgia Tech after both have just got their hind ends handed to them.
The same thing occurred to me. Whoever wins that game comes in second place to the SEC for the ACC championship.
I'll be honest now, that the Clemson one surprised me just by the size of it. I was honestly surprised by the Georgia game because we're sitting here going, who are these guys? Because these are the guys that have been playing the SEC all this year. I mean,
Look how Auburn played Alabama.
This is true.
I'm personally convinced that the reason that Georgia Tech lost that game, pinstriped pants.
I wouldn't put it past it.
I don't know what they're going to do with the winter meetings for all the conferences, but somebody has got to put a stop to this design madness coming out of I don't know, the evil scientist headquarters at Nike.
I know. He's out of the boys at Adidas.
I mean, did you see? I about had a sure enough conniption, Luke. I did when Florida ran out on the field and it's no big secret or anything. Football Saturdays, me and David from Tennessee have an ongoing email thing. Just watching the games and commenting back and forth. It's kind of like email play-by-play.
Well,
and Florida ran out on the field, and I just sent him an email saying, wings? They put wings on Florida's shoulders? Angel wings? Really?
Throwback uniforms or something. You're like, is this what they wore back in the 30s? What? The one that got to me, though, is we figured that's why Arkansas lost, because they kept looking over to LSU's helmets and going, what the hell are those?
Oh, I know. And Missouri? Missouri that looked like they were either going to Afghanistan or Kansas? You know, what? but the angel, and, you know, bless his heart, David writes back to me and says, oh, no, Bob, no. Those are gator paw prints. And I just wrote back, with nine claws? And apparently, no, some bizarro in Nike land. No, this is a design element that helps the player be faster by sweeping the wings. Wings on Tebow's shoulders with Hebrews 12:12. I was seconds away from the Elvis gun.
I know. It's one of them ones that's like, dear God, we've got to come out with the foam rubber bricks because we really needed them. I want to bounce it off the TV a few times, please. But no, we'll see. Like I say, what we've got left now is for us is just the Alabama Florida game, which I still wish. Somebody was talking tonight with over on Comcast over on their sports show said, isn't it amazing how the ACC game, most people couldn't tell you where it's going to happen. Said the SEC game said it's like a mini Super Bowl. Because if you go to Atlanta, I mean, it is a production and a half. Because that whole town, I mean, they have I guess it's probably corporate, but you know what I mean? They bring in the people and they have all the setup showing how everything, you know.
Yeah.
All the stuff. Oh, it's like the Super Bowl. Just on a little smaller scale, but not much. But, but going back to what we were a minute ago, let's go back to politics, because we'll do sports later in the week.
Okay.
But like you say, it's just amazing when you sit back and watch some of this stuff. Like say, it'll be interesting. Like say tomorrow, to write. I may get up and write the Washington Post and ask them, you know, what happened to Fox News? Phone Noise. What happened to their coverage of this? It just sort of disappeared when the word Huckabee appeared. You know, right after those words appeared, for some strange reason, it all just disappeared off their screen, pretty much.
It's magic.
But yeah. And from what I understand, I think in it this week. That Mr. Stewart and Mr. Colbert are back live.
I believe they are. Yes.
So this ought to be good.
Let me take you back to Sporting World just for 1 minute, okay. Because you at least will understand this. You know, Friday my Mountaineers played Pitt. Hated Pitt.
I forgot to mention about that.
Um,
And
you were hard pressed on that one.
Well, I was all set to be okay with it if we lost. You never want to lose to Pitt, but I was set to be okay with it. But you know how it is with when the groundhog comes out and doesn't see his, and sees his shadow, and you know you get six more weeks of bad weather.
Uh huh.
Well, we beat Pitt.
Oh dear.
And that means we've got probably got 8 to 10 more years of Coach Muehle.
Oh, God, did they give him an extension?
It'll be done by the time the Rutgers game is over. Mark my words.
Oh, well, I tell you what, it's going to be interesting to watch some of these coaches around because, like I say, not just the Charlie Weiss thing, which we all think we know what's going to happen, but it's going to be interesting to see all these other, you know, like I say,
I still say Urban Meyer's got to have, but his family doesn't want to leave Florida.
Oh, I bet they'll give him the call and he'll say, thank you, no, and hang up. But let's see, now we've got the Louisville head jobs coming open, the Virginia head job, the Maryland head job, I believe, is also, some people are talking like it's coming up.
Kansas, probably.
Kansas, yeah, oh, God. They may just go ahead and take him to prison. I mean, if you read some of that is just, ooh.
I know.
That'll put you to work as a prison guard.
Yeah, but it should be quite easy. And everybody's going to, I don't care what job opens up, everybody's going to call Brian Kelly.
Like I say, I think Notre Dame is aiming at him. He's their target.
And he'd be a fool to take it.
I'd be a fool not to take it, though, either.
But
you can't go no further than that job where he's at.
You can get a national championship. And it's going to be a long time before anybody gets a national championship at Notre Dame.
Oh, but like I said, I don't think you're going to be able to pull all this together again. I mean, this is sort of like playing everybody at 110%. Next year you're going to be playing at 80% and be happy where you get. You're one shot at it.
There's a big recruiting boost that comes with this kind of a season. And
we'll see what the University of Cincinnati is. I'm sorry, but it's not that great.
Oh, no. I mean, it's certainly not a Big Ten school or anything like that. It was until...
Oh, since the season brought that up, how is Rich Rod? Have they started the indictments yet?
Oh, you know, I think his plugs are falling out.
He could be sort of like Ray Gun Ronnie. You remember how the thing used to be after the nuclear thing? Only he left Ray Gun Ronnie's his hair. Is that the same thing with Rich Rod? Only he left the air plugs?
That's about it. God knows they can root them deep because there ain't much brains up there. But I just see that's the thing. He's not going to have that world that he had what he had at West Virginia because he had an opportunity to go down, and he had assistant coaches that had deep connections inside the SEC that had been assistants at Bama and Auburn and the like. And they went down and they found young men at places like Daphne, Alabama, who were told by LSU, Auburn, and Alabama, no, son, you are not good enough to play quarterback, but you'll make a fine little defensive back.
Oh, let me ask you one other question.
That ain't going to happen,
Michigan. On the phone, what do you think's going to happen? What do you think Brother Bobby is going to decide down at Florida State? Is it time to go home and enjoy the fruitful life after football?
Depends on how well the Aricept is working.
It's all right, Bobby. I think it's time to leave the stage gracefully.
Bobby is waiting to see, and this is the final analysis. Bobby is waiting to see if Joe Paterno will have the common decency to drop dead and let Bobby win a few more games so he can be the winningest coach.
That's Bobby's only hope. Because I don't see Joe Paul retiring anytime soon. I mean, they have to bring him down there on a stretcher. He'll do it.
Yeah, well, and Joe, but see, that's the thing. Joe Paul's still pretty sharp in the noggin.
Oh yeah.
Bobby ain't.
I know. I mean, you know, it's time to become a coach emeritus. You know, show up for the photo ops, have a good time, and say thank you, boys.
Well, and that's the whole thing about letting somebody else throw the spear, you know.
I know. Well, I mean, I'm glad they let him do it that last time because that was kind of, you know, sort of his, I think his, you know, hitting the tackling dummy the last time, you know, like seniors do.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that was sort of him thinking about it. So maybe he'll.
But that's well, but the other thing that has to bear on him is the fact that Mickey Andrews is quitting.
I know.
And
he was who's carrying him.
Yeah, well, and I've always had a lot of respect for Mickey just because Mickey was the head coach at what was then, I think, Florence State University, where I grew up.
Okay.
And he got that job down at Florida State, and you know he was the heart and he was why those just monster defenses happened.
Oh Oh, yeah. You know, we'll wait and see. I mean, like you say, it just depends if the medication's well and those two brain cells happen to slap together at the right time. If it does, it's like Bobby go out with some honor and say, thank you, kind of, y'all had a wonderful life. And, you know, you're 80 years old, time to go.
Yeah. And by the way, this update coming in from Dave in Tennessee, he says, based on what Kiffin and his quarterback coach have done to get Crompton out of the can't-play-a-lick ditch,
mm-hmm.
he said, David says he could go as late as the third round. Seems like some scout types are saying things like, don't count Crompton out once he does 3 years running a scout squad and has had an NFL coach living inside his shirt.
Well, it's like, say, hey, be a second or third string quarterback and be a clipboard holder is a great life if you can get away with it.
Well, it is, and sometimes
you pay good money to stand there and hold the clipboard, literally.
You know what? That was what Jeff Hostetler was paid to do, and he wound up getting himself a Super Bowl ring.
I mean, just remember Blanda. God, Blanda was in the pros for 25 years. When he couldn't throw the ball anymore, he learned how to kick.
And, you know, it is nice to know that we're not losing every single member of the audience on this conversation, Luke, because Marty has chimed in and he says, try being a Bruin fan when they play the University of Spoiled.
Don't talk to me about that. They beat us this year.
Well, okay, but he says, when they play the University of Spoiled Children, led by the all-time spoiled child Pete Carroll, and have what happened happen, please let the basketball team blow out USC every time.
I thought when that happened, I thought after the game, they were just going to put the coaches in a room, turn out the lights for 5 minutes, see what happened. Because I feel like apparently Pete Carroll is not making any friends in the Pac-10.
No.
Because apparently this ain't the only one he's picked off. There's a couple other coaches that have said a few things about Mr. Carroll, but let's just put it this way. I wouldn't be in a dark alley and somebody else behind me in a trash compactor truck.
Yeah, well, you know, it's I guess, you know, you as the campus there at USC, that's kind of Pete Carroll's little personal green zone.
Mm-hmm. So, like I say, he's got to do something in the next year or two. There's going to be people knocking on his door with long knives. Because I say, you know, when you fall from a high fall, even if you pull it back up to an 8-4 or 7-5 life, that's not good enough.
No, no. And it's all what have you done for me lately?
Yeah. Not what did you do for me 2-3 years ago. What have you done in the last 10 minutes?
Right.
If he wants to know that, we'll give him the number of Phil Fulmer.
Oh, and by the way, David informs me that old Bobby,
mm-hmm. Bobby,
had his sit down with the Florida State Athletic Director today.
Ah.
And that he got two choices, be a figurehead next year and give away to Jimbo or accept the apple in the roadmap right now.
I say, if it was us, I'd say accept the apple in the roadmap, but who knows with him. You know, it just depends how big his ego is.
I know.
All right, but let me let you go on. I know other people want to talk, and we can talk some politics. They talk some politics, and I apologize for killing the last 10 minutes with sports talks, folks.
That's okay. Well, you know, but we didn't lose everybody, like I said, so that's a good
thing. Well, we have to get this out of the way. You know how it is.
It is. I do. I know.
All right.
Later, Luke. Bye now. Oh, darn, I let Luke go without asking him the question of the evening. The progress of the Indict Barack Obama movement by the grand jury of Monroe County, Tennessee. Because that ain't too awful far from where Luke is over there in East Tennessee. That's the damnedest thing I've seen in a while. Obama treason charges advance in Tennessee grand jury. Today, apparently, the Obama treason charges were to be presented as a potential indictment in Monroe County, Tennessee. Or maybe it's just Monroe County, Tennessee. And it was being offered by a man named Commander Fitzpatrick. Walter Fitzpatrick III, retired Navy commander. Presented today, supposedly, a complaint against a man he calls either Barry Obama or Barry Sotoro to all 13 members of a Tennessee grand jury in Monroe County, Tennessee. What a load of And yet we couldn't get one single prosecutor, not one single prosecutor. And I know how hard folks like Bob Alexander worked. And if you listen to Malloy, you know who Bob Alexander is. To try to get just one county prosecutor to present one count of murder against George W. Bush. Meanwhile, this Looney Tune is going in front of a grand jury in Monroe County, Tennessee, jumping Jehoshaphat. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, locally 304-658-3333. Let's go on to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Garrett, what's up?
You're tempting me to go back into sports talk because you brought up all the good stuff, but oh my God, we got to talk about this New York Times opinion piece, because during the last break I read it and heard you talking about it, and it just has me friggin' furious. I mean, and it doesn't surprise me that Joe Lieberman is in fact truly a Levite. I mean, the man has no heart. He has no compassion. He's just pure ambition.
I think he's more and less than that at the same time, Garrett.
Yeah.
Joe Lieberman goes beyond. He takes ambition to a level that makes the most naked of ambition seem mild by comparison to the ambitious obscenity that is Joe Lieberman. But at the same time, he's so much less than that because he is so sick and so venal and so utterly corrupted by corporate money that, you know, to compare him to a prostitute is unfair to prostitutes.
Indeed. Absolutely indeed. I mean, and he just does it in such a, you know, such a sniveling, you know, way, which is why you do the droopy voice, because it's just how he is. I mean, it's just, oh. And also, about the wonderful gentleman that Huckabee, you know, let loose. Did we get a reason why he let him go loose?
Well, yeah. The Maurice Clemens started serving something like 60 years when he was 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he was tried as an adult on crimes that he committed when he wasn't quite one. That's not at all surprising. And frankly, children in prison is a real problem in this country. But so Maurice Clemens served 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mike Huckabee granted him clemency, not pardon, but clemency. And then in no time flat, once he'd been admitted to on parole, he did it again and went back to jail for two more years. But the law enforcement officers failed to serve the stinking arrest warrants on him.
But what I'm getting at is, why did Huckabee, why did he do it?
Why this guy?
Yeah, why this guy? I mean, as they joked in the chat room, I'm like, he must have found God. He must have found
God. I'm sure if somebody will go and do the legwork and pull up the petition, it's going to be full of, you know, my best friend Jesus.
I mean, because it's just...
But remember that Huckabee also, he was known to play fast and loose with pardons and clemency. Because, among other things, one of the things that he did do, I recall this fairly vividly. If somebody wants to find the link and send it to me, they're more than welcome to. But he also, against the advice of prosecutors, released a rapist who then went and committed murder, I do believe.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And he did it to get in a dig at Bill Clinton. Remember, Mike Huckabee is the worst kind of Republican because he is a hypocritical, phony Christian who loves nothing more than working out his sick, twisted personal vendettas through the political process. So, Garrett, I think you're absolutely correct in wondering, you know, okay, clemency because the guy was 17 and he'd done 11 years. How many other people were in Arkansas prisons who were 17 when they were convicted and had done a bunch of years?
No, it does not add up on its face. Mike Huckabee waking up one morning and saying, well, you know, I think I'll grant clemency to this here young black man. Come on. No. I mean, it doesn't fit. I mean, if you're somebody who has an ounce of honest human compassion, it does fit. But Mike Huckabee, the guy who was at the same time covering up for his son, there it is. Who was at the same time covering up for his son hanging a dog and beating it to death while it hung? There it is. There it is. Transference. Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner has told me about transference 1,000 times if he's told me about it once.
Yep.
Transference.
We've discovered a likely reason. I mean, if the dates match up, yeah. Because that's another one we remember hearing about. Huckabee's son went on Michael Vick on that dog. You know. But yeah, it wouldn't shock me because it just struck me as like, you know, made the joke. But it's like, something, it don't add up, and it's probably, that could be very well it.
All right. I mean, when he did it, Mike Huckabee's son was 18 years old. Oh, but wait. No, I'm wrong.
Oh?
One of his sons, David Huckabee, hanged a stray dog at Boy Scout camp in 1998.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And was dismissed from his job as a counselor at Camp Pioneer in Hatfield, Arkansas, at the age of 17.
The same age as... Yeah, it's the same age as this person that he, you know. Oh, boy. I mean, because everything has a reason. It's just like, this Obama, these two reality wannabes just getting their way into Obama, you know, right before he's about to make his Afghanistan, you know, his pledge that's either going to sink his presidency or make him a freaking hero. I know.
And I acknowledge that this is entirely speculative about Huckabee on my part, but, you know.
It's circumstantial evidence. I mean, you know, in the lack of a better explanation, you know.
But there may yet be a better explanation. We don't know.
Yeah, and we probably, I have a feeling we'll.
Because, you know, Huckabee's excuse, instead of, wow, did I screw up, his excuse was, well, the parole board cleared it. Well, the parole board may have cleared it, but lots of law enforcement people, apparently, according to the reporting I've seen, were saying, oh, hell no!
Well, obviously, it sounds, I mean, just from hearing this story, it sounds like this kid has, first off, probably shouldn't be in prison. Should be in a high-security mental health facility. I mean, you know, getting some real help because he's got issues.
He's got issues that have issues, sure.
Yeah, he's got more issues than Time, Sports Illustrated, and Newsweek put together.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like, and the best part is that if this Tiger Woods thing, this distraction, you know, dies off, which I'm expecting. I think they're waiting for proof that, you know, Tiger Woods was getting, you know, a little in a fight or something.
Oh, no, they've already, they've already identified the babe.
Oh, they have?
Yes.
I don't care about it that much. I just, you know, heard about the whole accident.
Apparently, Tiger went and played in the Australian Open.
Mm-hmm.
And the allegations were that he was No, I'm not going to even be cute. Just have it. He was getting it on with a 20-year-old, if I recall correct, a 20-year-old a woman from New York who was a hospitality worker. Who just who has already said it's just totally untrue. It's a complete coincidence that she and Tiger were in the same hotel in Sydney, Australia at the same time. Yep, no truth.
Yeah.
But you know, to follow up on what Luke said, you know, it ain't none of my business.
Well, it certainly ain't. I mean, you know, it's like the thing is that, you know, they're gonna. It doesn't shock me at all that they're gonna. Tear him and his wife apart just to make money, but it's a great distraction. And I mean, if that one doesn't hold, apparently today Grady Sizemore of the Cleveland Indians got partially nude pictures of him have leaked on the internet from his girlfriend's cell phone or whatever that he sent to her.
Yeah, I don't think we have much to worry about me going and finding those.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a string of distraction type things going on. It's like, I mean, I was convinced that there was going to be two more outrages going on by now. One with the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. There's a sequence at the beginning that's just so not PC that the game warns you. You probably want to skip this if you're a fan. If you're going to get offended. I was convinced that the moral rights people were going to go off on that. And on Thursday night, on Friday, I was convinced that people were going to go off because the NFL let a little F-bomb slip by on their NFL Network game there later on at night. I mean, you know, it's like, so many distractions coming, it's like they're even slipping by when I think that they're going to make a big deal about it.
I think you're probably, yeah.
It's just like, it's getting to the point to where it's like, it's just past me. I mean, it's like every potential distraction, you know, is cropping up all at once. And right when... You know, right when people are kind of getting catchy as it is because, oh, the health care debate, oh, the economy is going to garbage. It's like, you know, it's like all stops are being pulled out.
You know, and I guess the whole nation, myself included, Garrett, is on tenterhooks right now, wondering what goes down tomorrow night. It seems that he's going to come out and pull an LBJ and escalate the war.
It seems like that, but then you have this thing where he specifically wanted an exit strategy, and there seems to be proof that he might be trying to hedge his bets because, you know, if it starts looking bad, he wants to pull out like...
Well, there was one interesting little news item that I ran across this afternoon, Garrett, to the effect that I believe in 2011, the Karzai government has said it's going to start throwing out the contractors, otherwise known as mercenaries.
Oh, boy, yeah. And it's like they practically, and let's face it, they do so much of the war, whatever you want to call it at this point. I mean, the mercenaries, I mean, we can't do, it seems like they're doing so much for us, for our troops there at a zillion times the cost that, I mean, if they got kicked out, the military would be in a major scramble.
It would make things, I guess, even more complicated. But
yeah.
if that's true, that happens as of 2011, which is just a little more than a year away, then then you would have to think that if I know that, Barack Obama knows that, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff know that, so that would have
and
to
the contractors know
right, and that would have to put some sort of a
have some sort of an impact in the determination of how long you're willing to keep your guys there. Now, there's another study, story out there that, of course, I haven't seen reported in those bastions of the First Amendment, those guardians of the Fourth Estate, the American press, and that is this stink that's going down in Germany. Are you familiar with this, Garrett?
Which one is that again?
Well, this has to do with the fact that the Germans got caught bombing a bunch of civilians in Afghanistan.
I think I heard a little bit about this, yeah.
And then they lied about it, you know, and what I mean by lied about it is they put out the usual Pentagon press release saying, those were not civilians, those were insurgents, we bombed them, it is what the Luftwaffe does, you know.
Yeah.
But it's causing no amount of grief in German circles.
I'm sure they kind of learned their lesson about getting in unnecessary wars or wars of conquest. You think?
Yeah, they know a little bit about that. Oh, come on, where is it? I had it. Oh, there it is. Yeah, of course it comes from The Guardian.
Of course, because, you know, they actually do journalism there.
But it now appears that German participation in Afghanistan is in doubt on account of this. And what it has to do with is a bunch of... You know that $420 a gallon fuel that they buy over there for military troops?
Yeah.
Right. Well, it turns out that in Kunduz province, which is the Wehrmacht and the Luftwaffe have responsibility for, it turns out that they identified I guess some fuel tankers got hijacked. Okay. And instead of letting the $420 a gallon fuel fall into the hands of the Rebel Alliance or whatever, the Empire decided to bomb the tankers and blow them up.
The classic strategy of denial. Gee. It's classic cartoon villain strategy. It worked. If I can't have it, you, nobody can.
Right. And so at the time, the defense minister of Germany was a man named Franz Josef Jung. And a day after he wound up resigning as labor minister, he'd moved on. A day after the Wehrmacht chief of staff, Wolfgang Schneiderhan, quit after they both got caught lying. And what it boils down to is they got caught by the video. Colonel Jörg Klein ordered the airstrike based on a single piece of intelligence, The Guardian reports, from an Afghan informant, they're always good, who couldn't even see the vehicles. And the bombing raid went down, and then it turns out that when one of the trucks was crippled, let me see if I've got this straight, one of the trucks was crippled, and a bunch of the locals who need fuel too, you know, came up to start filling their jugs, and the Germans toasted it. And toasted the civilians, too.
Of course, because when you set fuel on fire, we've